morning skit any better?
Yeah. Could you please help me?
Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. The other day, makes you feel good to fly. A lot of times you think about flying and you don't realize how many people, human beings, who every one of us is fallible, how many people your life depends on in order to get from one place to the other safely.
I mean, listen, if you really want to freak yourself out, you can think about the engineers that make sure that the plane is running smoothly, that all the parts aren't falling off, the pilots who are flying you from one place to the next. And then there is the air traffic controller, who might have one of the more dangerous jobs of anyone else, where you have to be the sharpest because you're preventing planes from smacking right into each other in midair. Now, I'm wondering nowadays, like, whether or not technology has made the dependency on air traffic controllers a little bit less because of the actual radar on the planes, and they can sense where the other planes are. I would have to think that's part of it.
Yeah, but there's still a reason they're there.
Oh, without a doubt, especially around the airport and controlling the traffic on who's going to land where. Well, this is a story that came out just the other day, and this is from it's out of Las Vegas. They said, why was an air traffic controller slurring her words and even going silent when alone in a control tower in Las Vegas? That's what the Federal Aviation Administration wants to know. First of all, don't you think there should be some sort of rule that you have to have more than one air traffic controller in a tower at a time in case, A, something like this happens, or B, what if somebody has a heart attack and passes out?
Yeah, I think there should be about, like, literally, I'm not joking, 40 guys.
Yeah, right. I always think of, like, Die Hard 2. You know, there's, like,
a bunch of guys running around.
A people. Like,
I think that would be great. Yeah. You know?
But one person alone running that? That right there is mortifying.
Right, because, again, as human beings, we'll make mistakes. You'll make poor choices. You know, there's a proclivity to addiction. There's mental health issues.
I mean, just...
There's lots of things that could go wrong.
To trust one person to be in control of all those lives is a little strange. So the FAA said that the female controller, whose name has not been released, became incapacitated while on duty. They said the FAA did not release how she became incapacitated. The woman started her shift at 10 p.m. on Wednesday. About an hour later, the FAA said her performance started to go down before becoming impaired at 11:24. She lasted an hour and 24 minutes. They said she became fully unresponsive at 11:47. They said no incidents happened while the woman, who was heard in recording slurring her words, possibly lost consciousness just before midnight on Wednesday. All right. Now, what we have here is recordings that have been released since. Now, these are the voices of pilots who are trying to land, request permission for landing, circling the airport, and this is the woman who's in charge of making sure they don't smack into each other and running the traffic over it. I guess it would be Las Vegas McCarran. And would you like to hear this, lady? Let's take a listen.
Sure, let's all feel bad about heading into Thanksgiving.
Somebody up there that knows what they're doing. Say that again.
7-7-62, runway 1 right,
clear for takeoff. Okay, confirm it's run Frontier 262, clear for takeoff, 1 right.
Sorry, Frontier 262, runway 1 right. Sorry, I'm choking a little bit.
United 448
crash,
let's just
point.
Oh.
You're a pilot. You're sitting on a runway. Oh, no, he's in the air, that guy, right? Or yeah. No, he's taking off.
Well, that guy was okay. That guy was taking off.
Guy taking off. There's another guy in the air.
There's
and by
another
the way,
guy in the air landing at how fast? And he's got this woman bringing her in.
That went on for an hour and 47 minutes she became unresponsive. And that by the way, there was apparently a more tape where it's just like 2 minutes of her just coughing and grunting. Now, they're not releasing her name. They're not saying what happened. But, I mean, it just sounds to me like she is someone who is under the influence of some sort of alcohol or drug or whatever like that, which begs the question, have you ever gone to work and your coworker has shown up either drunk or incapacitated? Have you ever shown up and been like, whoa, what is this person doing here?
Because I've told you the best way to maintain a hangover at work when you're trying to get rid of it, and that's to take an IV needle and shoot a vodka into an orange.
Right.
And then you eat the orange, and right. No one will be the wiser.
And no one would know. Now, John, you were telling me that you indeed had a situation where you showed up one day and someone had, it was at work and they were drunk.
Yeah.
By the way, 617-779-0985.
Sophomore year of high school, I had a social studies teacher who was married to, and you'll love this, Fred, the head of band in my high school.
So you're saying he was the school hunk?
Yes, that's right.
So he
had been there forever. The two of them had been married for 30, 40 years, whatever. And she taught social studies at my high school, and he was the band director. And oddly enough, he left the next year, now that I think about it. But apparently, he had told her the night before that he was filing for divorce. This is what I understand to be true. And she showed up bombed out of her mind my sophomore year. She shows up, she had the sunglasses on, her head was down, she looked like she was white, she shows pale, shows up, she sits down in front of the class, and we're all sitting there and it's all quiet and we're all looking at her. She's going, "Class dismissed." And we all left the room. It was great. We were in class for maybe 3 minutes. Class just was.
So what happens at that point?
So you leave. And we didn't see her again for a week.
No, I understand that. But when she says class dismissed,
yeah,
that early in the process.
Yeah, and it was like a 9 a.m. class. I mean, this wasn't like 2 in the afternoon. So
people are going to find out that you left.
Yes. I don't remember. There were no repercussions. We were all wandering around. Nothing happened.
I mean, if she's there, just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Or just, go. She was
right on the verge of head on the desk time. I mean, her head was like hanging like a foot over the desk. It was really funny.
We found a teacher taking a nap in her closet one time.
Oh.
And looking back, she was probably drunk. During class where she got in and she immediately gave us this like class long assignment and then walked in. Now, the closet's not that big. The closet's about as big as our little break room right there, which is like where a refrigerator is. And she closed the door and that never happens. And no one heard from her. And the class ended. And as the bell rang, somebody went and knocked on the door because they had to talk to the teacher, and they opened it up and they woke her up.
Well, at least that one was in private. Mine was not.
Right. She slept on her hangover during class.
You had to go search. We didn't have to look to find the mine. It was right in front of us.
See, I was walking to school one day because I lived right by school, and I passed a friend of mine in his truck, and he was drinking vodka at 7 in the morning.
Oh, jeez, man.
Which I found fairly bad. And then my friends of mine that I had been in a band in, smoked like a pre-roll, and it was obviously, I think it was laced with ammonia, like it had been dipped in something poisonous. And the kid, his name is Lee, the kid stood up and he went, and then just passed out. I had a friend, I know this is kind of off topic, but then I had a friend who had done acid, this is middle school, had done acid, and he poked me in the back, and there was this page with all these scribbles on it, and he's like, "I forgot how to write."
Apparently.
Oh, Jeff says his wife was on one of those Vegas flights. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? My wife was on a flight from Seattle on Wednesday. I'm freaking out because we're trying to figure out what was going on, and now I hear this is the first we've heard about it. I'm going to call her after this, obviously, but yeah, they had to circle and were delayed by, I don't know, roughly 45 minutes because of this.
Oh, boy.
And and now we have, obviously, the answer, intoxicated Sally, obviously.
So, oh, boy.
Jesus. Yeah, this is fun. Now I get to tell her this story.
Yeah, it's everywhere now. And you said it was Wednesday that it happened? Let me make sure that the dates light up. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it.
It was Wednesday. 45.
You're absolutely right. Oh my God. Yeah.
45 minutes of circling. And they couldn't get it together to find out that something was going on. Well, do you know about that disc jockey that was in San Francisco who was doing middays?
She poured wine all over the board.
Yeah. And then they came in and then she sounded drunk.
We might have that audio. I think that's out there.
Yeah, and that was, she was like a nice, like no one thought anything, and
but she like came, straight up was drinking while she was on the air,
which we can't throw stones at.
Which no, early days, but we were good about hiding it.
That's
at
right.
least.
No, we didn't hide it. We didn't hide it until they told us we couldn't do it.
I think poor Dan was put on patrol to make sure we weren't drinking.
Yes, he was put on patrol.
Sure, like double secret probation. I had to go down the hall, and you guys had the shades pulled, and yeah, that was fun.
But that was like, you know, a Friday at like, you know, 5:30.
Good
you
times.
Know,
yeah.
You know, and Martinetti's was right next door.
It kind of devolved from Fridays into several other days.
Yes, it did.
All right, your phone calls, people coming into work drunk, 617-779-0985. Again, I've never done this, I swear to God, but a hypodermic needle into an orange. You put vodka into it, no one's the wiser. All right, we'll return.
The games are only half of it. Hatcher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Your flight is still here. Radio contact. Close the lamps.
Somebody up there that knows what they're doing.
1-7-60, room and low end. Let's take off.
Say that again.
Frontier 762, runway 1 mark, clear for takeoff.
Okay, confirm it's run Frontier 262, clear for takeoff, 1 right.
Sorry, Frontier 262, runway 1 right, clear for takeoff. Sorry, I'm choking a little bit. United 448, correct, let's just do it. Thank you.
.985 the Sports Hub. That is a air traffic controller in Vegas on Wednesday. Assuming she was under the influence of something, obviously there could always be another explanation, but just for this exercise, we're assuming that.
A lot of people were calling in and saying, I think I know who that air traffic controller was.
I'm not doing it.
They say, was that Dilly?
Maybe that's
again with the Dilly.
I think that maybe Dilly was, you know, she was too busy calling the show.
Which flight were you talking about there?
12,000 times.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yes, Dilly, maybe an air traffic controller somewhere, a smaller airport. Listen, they let the gunner work the bridge.
Yeah, gunner was responsible for a bridge at some point. That's right.
All right.
So we were asking, I mean, have you ever come into work and your coworker was blasted?
Yeah, not. In, like buzzed or
blasted,
came in still drunk from the night before,
like to where you're just like, am I the only one noticing this?
Like where they could barely function. All right, Ryan, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing, guys? First time, long time. So I've been in the moving industry my whole life, and we were so I see a lot of this, and we were doing a job out of state. We were at another company's warehouse. And one of the guys that was with us was trashed, and he was using the bathroom in between a couple of trailers in their yard. So he falls asleep, pants down. He's passed out using the bathroom. So we called our dispatcher up. He said, leave him. So we just left the guy in just, I don't know whatever happened to him, actually. We never saw him again. But just had to share it. So thanks, guys. Love you guys. We'll see you later.
You just left the guy with his pants down?
Oh, sure. Yeah, just leave him. What are you going to do? Not yours, but he's naked. You can't make him touch him.
No, you can't, but... Oh, man. I mean, there's part of me that says, you know, the noble thing to do would be to make sure that he's, you know, the dignity, you get his pants down. And then there's, I'm not touching the guy with his pants down.
Yeah,
I think the reality of it is probably exactly what that guy just said.
Well, I have a friend who's a fireman who I saw yesterday, and he was saying that they found a guy, he just got out of the hospital, he'd thrown all his papers, like, into the road.
Yeah.
And he was, like, sitting there, and they're like, dude, you can't, like, just sit here, you gotta try to... You got to get up and everything. And so he starts walking away, and they're like, fine, I don't want to deal with this. And then just keeps flopping over. And then they're like, ah, we got to call an effing ambulance. All right. Jesse, go ahead, sir.
Hey, Jesse.
So, yeah, sorry. So I'm a teacher, and I co-teach a class. And many years ago, when I first started teaching, my partner teacher actually fell asleep in the middle of a parent teacher conference with the parents right there. It was pretty awkward.
All right. What time of day was this?
This is probably 2-3 in the afternoon.
Now, how? So that means you're bringing in your own alcohol into school, correct?
I'm pretty naive. I hope not, but perhaps.
So what did you say to the parents who are sitting across from you as this co-teacher of yours falls asleep in front of them?
So she was an older teacher, and parents seemed to love her. I actually don't know if they noticed. I kind of kicked her under the table and nudged her awake. And yeah, it was pretty awkward. It was my first year. I think I was probably a student teacher at the time. Not a fun time.
Yeah, they noticed. They noticed. Yeah, I guarantee you they noticed.
That's kind of tough to miss.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt they did.
Yeah.
Somebody said, I worked at a car dealership at 7:15. Salesman comes in pie-eyed. 8:30, he's showing customers a car, leans on the freshly waxed hood, and falls on the showroom floor and starts crying. Sales manager called him a cab.
Oh. Now, does he keep the job?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Like, do you fire the guy? Now, do you fire the guy from coming in? If he's a good salesman, that's the ethical question.
You see, if it's a first-time offense, no, you don't.
You can't.
You can't. You just be like, dude, everyone messes up. You know, just listen. You didn't kill anybody. It's not like an air traffic. You have to fire her.
Right.
But
right.
Like, something like this, obviously. You're just like, all right, man, just don't ever do this again.
Yeah, if you have a good salesman and he does that, I don't think you can fire him. I don't even think you suspend him. You just go, don't come in drunk again.
Yeah. You just got to warn him.
Because my dad had a boss where they knew that he was in advertising, he had a boss that they knew that you had to get everything in before he came back from lunch. Because after he came back from lunch, he was just in a drunken rage.
Well, that's in the Mad Men days,
yes.
Right? When everyone was drinking. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, three martini lunches. let's go to Danny. Go ahead.
How's it going? It sounds like a drunk salesman. If he's a good salesman, is probably getting some Josh Gordon treatment as far as longer leash.
That's right.
Well, maybe.
So I used to bartend, which was, you know, people coming in drunk or hungover was par for the course. But I had a buddy who used to work for this small landscaping company. And, like, the boss would pick everybody up in the morning at the work truck. And they had this one guy who wouldn't just show up drunk or hungover from the night before. The boss used to have to keep a six-pack of beers in the back of the truck. Otherwise, this guy was, like, useless. It was like you couldn't fire him. He needed the employee. He didn't have a lot of people working for him. So this guy would show up and just he'd see him and be like, all right, grab one out of the back, and then let's go to work.
Oh, what a cool boss.
Any work out of this guy was if he got him a couple beers. Otherwise, the guy would be absolutely useless for the rest of the day.
So what did you guys do? What was your
landscaping.
All right, well, that's not really.
It was landscaping. It was one of my buddies. It was landscaping. So, you know, they show up at people's houses. The people usually aren't home while they're doing the work. But the only way they were getting any productivity out of this guy at all was if they fed him a couple beers in the morning before they started their shift. Because the dude was just absolutely either hungover or drunk from the night before and would get, like, the shakes. He would always say, oh, Mike, I don't want a drink. I need a drink. That's how this guy was in the morning.
All right. You know what? I would.
It's something like landscaping. It's like, you know, whatever. I mean, but you know, I mean, if you're not operating a forklift or something like that.
I knew a guy that was a trash man in Atlanta, and he said that the greatest thing about the job is you could drink. Like, if you weren't driving the truck, if you were just hanging on the back of it, like, it was great. It's like you just could drink all day.
I don't think they test you.
They don't care. Like, what's going to happen? You're going to pick up the
trash. There's a line of people waiting for your job, sir.
Right.
Do you know how important it is? Don't mess up.
He was like, you know, he had, you know, opportunities to do other city jobs. And he was like, why? He's like, I just go out and hang on. The weather's generally nice. I just go out and hang on the back of the truck. We start drinking about 11 in the morning. Who cares? Let's see. All right, line 7. Derek, go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey, what's up?
So I'm out of Providence, and I hired a kid. My family owns a construction company, and we just bought a brand-new pickup truck, 2017, fully loaded. The first day this guy got hired, he stole the pickup truck, and we couldn't find him for 3 days.
You just stole it?
He stole the pickup truck. He stole it. We found him. Now, I'm out of Providence. We found him at Newport. He drove himself to a hospital in Newport.
Now, did he expect not to get caught considering you had all of his information?
Well, we hired him on one of those like programs where it was like, you know, try to get better. You know, they put you in like the construction industry.
Sure.
And nice kid, maybe about like 20 years old, freaking just, you know, stole the truck. I guess he was wicked wasted at like 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
And he was going to go buy some heroin and then just drove himself to the hospital.
Oh, geez, man.
Well, listen, you got to get your heroin one way or another.
I think that the one story that sticks with me as far as just someone being wildly irresponsible at work was, and Fred, you know this, is Crash, who, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know that he used to be here. And Crash one time was doing one of these remote broadcasts from a nightclub that was in town, a notorious nightclub where it was basically the seventh circle of hell. And it was one of these things where every 20 minutes they would check in and they would go, all right, let's see what Crash is doing over at the so-and-so Jelly Rolls or whatever the place is called. And they would pot it up and it would be like, hey, it's Crash. I'm out here. It's Friday night. We're partying. How's everyone doing? Woo! And they would do that every 20 minutes. And he was supposed to be doing that from like 8 o'clock at night till midnight. So the DJ who's running the board back at the station, the first break, pots up the microphone and Crash is like, all right, hey, I'm out here. Second break. There's silence and he goes, all right, I wonder if we're just having technical difficulties, calls, and they say that they can't find Crash. They go back to him. He's not there. They just stop doing the broadcast. So at the end of the night, the club is shutting down. All right. No one could find Crash, but the guy who runs the place, all the lights are off and it's probably about 3 a.m. and the manager wants to get into his office to count the money and stuff and goes to open his door and the door is locked. And so the guy like keeps kicking on the door, and I believe they had to break it open, Fred. They break open the door, and when they open it up, lying on the floor is Crash Clark, buck-ass naked and passed out next to some sort of young girl.
Yes.
Huh.
I got a better one. Because I got...
He got fired for about a month.
Uh-huh.
And then they brought him back because everyone liked Crash.
Oh, yeah. I got a great Crash one. So remember when it was in Brookline? Or not Brookline. Jeez. Remember when it was in Buckhead?
Yeah.
And there was the Ellis Tech right across the street?
Yeah.
All right. So this is in like 2000, like the, let's say the fall of 2002. So he's got an appearance across the street where it's Cinco de Mayo. Oh, no, it's just appearance across the street. So, Axel, who's another DJ, and I go over there to hang out with Crash, and he's just obliterated.
Obliterated?
Obliterated. I don't know how to say it. So, I'm drunk right now. And so, he's just wasted, and he can't do the breaks. So, Axel and I end up doing the breaks, and we're kind of joking around about how wasted Crash is. Well, our boss goes into the LS Teca. And she's like, what the hell is going on? And he goes, I'm upset about 9/11.
And when was this?
It was the fall after.
A year. It was a year later.
So for a year.
It was a year later.
And he knows nobody was in 9/11. It wasn't like an anniversary of anything.
No, it was not an anniversary.
This is like 9 months, like 13, 14 months after the fact.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, the first thing that came into his head was he was very upset about 9/11.
Did he lose a job then or no?
No, not
that time. Okay.
No, you could get away with a lot back then.
A guy on the Twitter says, I know a guy who once got super wasted and then interviewed Incubus this one time.
Yep.
That would be
me.
Of course. That would
absolutely
be Fred.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a different kind of game. All right. Shaughnessy. He's a scribe of local note. We will discuss something that he wrote in just a moment. Here are the headlines.
You're listening to Tutcher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Do you have anything like good to offer the conversation besides booze breath?
No.
Are you like drunk guy on the radio? Is that your gig? That's like your thing that you do?
Kind of.
Do you have anything like good to offer the conversation besides booze breath?
No. We sometimes play Gandalf or Incubus at some times.
That's still one of my favorite moments.
You get one of them.
It was great. And it was great.
You do it again.
And you did it. And you touched the sun.
Again, yeah. It's funny once. The second time. Oh, it's been a really long time since then, so maybe I got another one in me. But
yeah, I mean, what would you? I would say, you know, I'd say you won a decade.
Yeah, I mean, that was a decade ago.
Yeah, sure. So let's do it again.
Sure. We've got to find the right time. Mm-hmm. Can't really do it at a charity event. So there's those things that are going on. All right, so Dan Shaughnessy wrote an article about the Boston Celtics, and he is questioning why this team is not called out, which is a conversation that we've had for years.
It is, and it's really, it's been that way ever since Brad Stevens showed up, and his article is titled, "After a Lukewarm Start, the Celtics Don't Seem to Be Taking Any Heat." He says, "The Celtics live a charmed life around here. Seldom is heard a discouraging word. It's as if the Auerbach, Russell, Havlicek, Bird decades pooled a reservoir of goodwill that quenches the thirst of fans and media tough guys deep into a new century. The Celtics operate with relative immunity from the everyday noise and negativity that touches our other three successful franchises. Think about it. Nobody ever makes fun of the Celtics owners. Nobody calls them cheap or complains about ticket prices. Basketball boss Danny Ainge is praised nonstop for his vision and brilliance. And coach Brad Stevens is universally hailed as a homespun Hoosier successor to John Wooden or even Red himself. Meanwhile, the Patriots are held to an impossibly high standard. The Red Sox are questioned by a region of basketball know-it-alls. And proud hockey Krishnas are ever ready to carry pitchforks to Causeway Street if things are not so swell with the Bruins. But it's always Bula Bula for the green team." And he goes on to talk about what's been going on with them, with that road trip that was awful. They were 1-for-4, and that one game that they won was against Phoenix, and they had to come back from, I think, over 20. It might have been 21 points during that game. The last three, as a matter of fact, there's been deficits outside of that. They said, "So do you think the players have gotten caught up in all the praise that they've gotten?" And he talks about that. And he said, "In the meanwhile, the Celtics are back home and nobody's particularly worried. They are, after all, the Celtics, the Hakuna Matata 5. Everything is always awesome." Now, he's right. They do get less crap than a lot of teams, but I think there's a reason because of that. Number one is this started once Brad Stevens showed up. And Brad Stevens has improved this team every single year since he's been here. Now, a lot of this has been, you know, a trust the process type thing. Listen, as long as they get better from one year to the next, then we're not going to crap on this team because we obviously know what he's doing is working. That's the first part why they haven't, as you were saying, in years, gotten a ton of crap. The second reason why they're not getting as much crap right now is that we knew months ago, as a matter of fact, we said that on the air, that this was going to be a tough first several months. We said at the beginning of the season, when you have two starters coming off of surgeries, one bench player returning from a surgery, high expectations among second-year players like Jason Tatum, and bench guys who overachieved in the playoffs like Terry Rozier, the world's telling them they're going to win the East. You knew Brad Stevens was going to have his hands full. And it does feel like a different team now that Gordon Hayward's in the mix, and now that you have Kyrie Irving playing with this unit in the first unit, we knew it was going to be tough. However, what's happened over the last five games is something that you got to start putting some blame on Brad Stevens. And I know that the guys on the team, including Marcus Smart, who apparently went nuts after that Utah loss, started ripping into the team about it was their fault, everything. Whose job is it to create urgency amongst the players?
It's the coaches, and to give Brad Stevens credit, he's gotten in front of the media and said as much.
And he has said that. And, like, okay, there's
more than
part
once.
Of,
but also, I'm not... I know what everyone's saying, and Danny Ainge has said it as well, that they'll play better basketball as the season goes on. But, you can't just go like, oh, well, you got a lot better. The players are all a lot better. And, you know, that's going to take some time. I mean, the fact that you have a superior product on the court in terms of talent doesn't justify that road trip.
Well, the road trip is bad. And as a matter of fact, the players are now, thank goodness, saying the right thing. First of all, there's two reasons, actually three reasons why they've been losing. The two minor reasons are, number one, a lot of the shots, they had some open shots at the beginning of that road trip that just weren't going in. And that was abysmal. That's not one of the major excuses. Another one is that their inability to go back and play defense the way that they used to before that road trip is somewhat concerning. But the main thing is they just don't put forth the effort that they need to put forth until they're down in a hole. And then they play like absolute monsters. The second half of those last three games, That's the Celtics basketball that you're supposed to be seeing for the entirety of the game. And it sucks that it takes getting punched in the mouth and being embarrassed before they can do that. Now, there are two guys who are doing the best that they can to try, actually three guys rather, to pull them out of that funk. Kyrie's been great. And I know that he even made a comment like, man, I wish we had some sort of veteran out here to say that you can't walk through these months. You can't walk through these games. And he's played his ass off. Marcus Morris, we know what he's been able to do. And Marcus Smart, he's the one guy out there who does never takes a defensive play off. And that's truly where they're falling behind. I mean, it's embarrassing how their numbers have gone down. Just from that beginning portion of the season, they were I think they were the best defensive team in the league.
Yes.
And they've been so bad that where are they now? I mean, like they've fallen pretty poorly. Now, because of the second half, they've been able to kind of at least maintain a little bit.
They've given up 100 points or more in each of every game they've played this month, whereas before they were allowing, I think, 98 or 99 a game.
Yeah. So it has been, you got to give them some grief. But the reason Fred and the reason Dan Shaughnessy is saying this is why they've gotten a free pass. That's easy to explain. Because since Brad Stevens has been here, the team's just gotten better and better and better. And to compare that to a championship team.
Ever since they went on that run, and I think it was December, January of his second season, and they made the playoffs after winning 25 the previous year. There were no expectations when Brad Stevens walked in the door. He won, I think, 25 games that first season, and since then it's been a steady climb.
Right. If they don't make the finals this year, it's that should change.
Without a doubt. And even with the addition to Jimmy Butler to Philadelphia, you still should beat that team.
There's a long leash, but it gets a lot shorter if we're sitting here at the end of January and they're still 500. I mean, then things change. I mean, for the first time, you can see where fans are ready to jump on this team. There's a finite window of time which they have to get better. We're in mid-November. I think they'll have it together by Christmas. Say they don't have it together by Christmas, shortly thereafter. I mean, this team has about 6 weeks to 2 months to get its act together. Because we've seen it before. We brought up the LeBron James thing. When you put a whole mess of good players together, it takes a while to feel each other out sometimes.
And I know what Brad Stevens is trying to do, Fred, too, putting Gordon Hayward out there in the starting five. I understand it. He's trying to get him started. He's trying to get him to feel like normal. But we're now at a point when you lose 4 out of 5 games, you got to put him on the bench. You got to start him on the bench. You need strong starts. You need your best shooters, your best players out there, the guys who can play the best defensively. And Hayward obviously is not yet who he was when he was in
Morris.
Utah.
Maybe that's Morris. Maybe.
If
you want to be physical, it could be Baines. It depends on the matchup.
Yeah, but I just think that if you're having that kind of success off the bench, you don't screw around with it. And that's been evident. There's several times that NBA teams have had guys come off the bench that were superior talents to people that were in the starting five.
Maybe put Smart in the starting five.
In a situation like this, you need energy immediately. And that's clearly what this team needs. You know, you can't. They've fallen behind by 20 points or more in each of their last three games.
Yeah, but do you think he's effective?
Who, Morris?
Starting than he is off the bench.
He started before. This is a foreign concept.
Understand that. But the way he's playing this year.
Sure.
I mean,
I'm with Fred. You don't mess with that. I mean, he's been a monster off the bench.
All right, so if you put Hayward on the bench, who do you start in his place?
Maybe your starting five would be Kyrie, Marcus Smart.
You see, that
you put Jason Tatum and then Al Horford.
You see, I think Smart is a guy who, and you were just talking about it, is great for energy off the bench.
Set the tone immediately.
I understand that, but you give up a lot on the offensive end to do that. If you start Morris, you don't give up a lot on the offensive end.
Well, you hopefully would have, I mean, you have enough talent out there to pick up the slack. Do you need someone who's a scorer?
In today's day and age where you space the floor and have one big, yeah, I think you start Morris.
In this day and age where you can also run a lot of ISO.
Yeah. No, I understand that. And I think Smart brings a type of energy you just don't see from just about anybody else.
And by the way, Gordon Hayward has said that he is more than happy to come off the bench. Like, I mean, he's like, whatever it takes to win. I think everyone's just frustrated.
I think that you could certainly see a change tonight. And who better to experiment on than Chicago?
Yeah, if they don't throttle the Bulls.
4-10,
yeah, they got to throttle.
And missing
tonight.
Lauri Markkanen in their best player.
Tonight needs to be a statement game. This needs to say that, all right.
Yeah, they need to go out and tear this team apart. I agree.
How many days have they been sitting on this? What, 3 days?
Yeah.
So they've been sitting on this. They come back
from
a road trip.
Sunday night, right?
You have a weak team ahead of you. You have to throttle them and make a statement tonight. This is not a game that's got that needs to be close at the end. And you need to come out with a big lead right from the beginning because this team has it in them. The talent is there.
Yeah.
It's just about effort at the beginning of the game, and that sucks.
Just need to get yourself started. I agree.
All right. We will talk to Mike Gorman about these very issues coming up at 8:20 this morning. We will be back in just a moment. Rich has got something up his sleeve at 8 o'clock.
Coming up at 8.
Which I don't know about. I'm glad I don't know about it. But we will find out at 8 o'clock what is going on. And we will have that in just a moment.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. After being humiliated with the GoPro on the bike as I went around here at the station, I've invested some money in the thing. Now, I guess the good that came out of it is I finally weighed myself and realized that I have to lose a tremendous amount of weight. But young Nicholas is just sitting at home with this bike. He hasn't even made an effort to get it to me.
So It's at your place. It's not in your car right now, Nick?
No, it's at his place. He's riding around like nobody's business.
It's currently at the bike shop. I have to pick it up. I'm picking it up today to drop it off at Fred's later.
Wait, I didn't know that. Yeah. I texted you yesterday and said I wanted the bike.
I know.
And you never got back to me.
Well, you text me at 9:30. I'm pretty sure the bike shop is closed at that point.
No, but you could get back to me, smartass.
I was already asleep.
I had a meeting last night. No, you weren't. Because you had texted me right before that.
No, I didn't. I text you at 5 o'clock. Hold on.
Mm.
I'll find out.
Text wars? Is this what we're doing here?
Yeah. I want to know when he texted me.
I text you at 4:57.
All right. Well, I want my bike.
Why is it at the shop?
Well, I had to get front brakes installed for him.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, since I'm going to deduct money from what I owe you for every day that you haven't given me that bicycle. Because you know it's snowing tomorrow.
It is snowing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Dude, that's ridiculous. But it's going to melt like right away, right? It's going to rain and it's going to go away.
I don't know. Getting here is going to be hell on earth.
Yeah,
I can only
suck.
Imagine with freezing rain what it's going to be like to get here. All I know is that there's a, you're like the fat guy in Pee Wee Herman.
Francis?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, I want my bike.
All right.
And you'll
get your bike today.
I don't want to have to travel around to the Alamo to get it. All right. You're gonna drop it off today?
I'll drop it off today.
All right. Because I want it before it gets too snowy. I want to be able to go off ramps and stuff.
Can you do like endos and stuff like that? Can I film
that? I can't now. No, you're not filming anything yet until I master it. And then I'm going to shove it in everyone's face. It's my only goal. My only goal now is to shove it in everyone's face. If Wiggins was the ultimate in showing me that anything is possible. When he got on that thing and he could actually get it off the ground weighing 290 pounds, I decided that this was my chance. This is what I got to do.
Well, the next time we do this, I'll make sure the GoPro is angled more, not at your stomach. No. I think that was a... That was my fault.
Wiggins is so big in that bike, you can barely see the bike. It just looked like
Nick,
he was
why don't
just,
you
like,
take your shirt off and let us take pictures of you?
Why? Why?
Because you're making fun of the way I look. I've done a show with my shirt off. I ridicule myself on a daily basis.
I'm not making fun of
you.
They're
a heart valve.
I'm saying it was my mistake that it was more, you know, directed at your stomach and not your face.
Well, that's insulting.
No.
You don't understand how that could be, because you're saying that it was a disaster, my stomach.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
I know.
Am
what
I
you're saying
that, Rich?
I know what you're trying to say. Well, you're doing a horrible job. Saying,
in response, I know what you're trying to say. Critique of your physique. Yeah. He's saying, in retrospect, he wishes
the critique of my physique made the bit funny. I don't have a problem with that.
I thought he was trying. I thought you were trying to say that you wish you would have captured more of the expression.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Right. No, he's not. That's not what he's trying to say at all.
That is what I'm trying to say. I promise.
All right, young Nicholas. Well, this bike king. Where do you live now?
Weymouth.
Where the hell is Weymouth?
Route 3.
Okay. Where's Weymouth?
South.
It's like 20 minutes away.
From my house?
Probably around 30 minutes from your house.
Without traffic?
Yep.
Well, it takes me 30 minutes to get home from here. So I got no sympathy. I want my bike, and then you're on your way.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. I'll give you. I'm going to give you a check dated 11/14/2019. All right, Rich. We don't have any commercials, just the headlines. What are we going to talk about?
It looks like John from Vegas has touched the sun.
Hey now,
John from Vegas. We have a Sarge call where we never thought we'd ever have one.
Got one. You put out the call yesterday.
The day before yesterday.
This was one that was 2 days in the making.
Oh.
Right. There was quite a process to make this happen.
Interesting.
And John from Vegas did. All right.
John from Vegas, putting in the effort, putting in the legwork.
Mm-hmm. We've got, we hit the Mount Rushmore.
All right. Mm. I don't know where we go from here.
But, no, there's still more mountains to be climbed.
I know. All right. Here are the headlines.
Touchdown! Score!
From the Town Fair Tire Studios, Boston's home for sports is WBZ-FM and HD Boston.